Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wiseye.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to use it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind for the week that Republican legislators put a budget, almost, it's almost on the desk of Democratic Governor Tony Evers. J.R., we have so much news, let's go right into it, okay?
Okay,
let's give an overview of this budget. First of all, the Assembly took it up on Tuesday, and 60 Assembly Republicans voted yes, 3 Republicans and 36 Democrats voted no. Who voted no for the Republicans?
Janelle Branchon, Tim Rantham,
yes,
and
Gundrum. Gundrum, thank you. Okay. Any surprises there?
No. I was trying to figure out the whole time in the debate, like, who might be the no's, and then it kind of, you know, came clear. You're talking, like, southeastern Wisconsin Republicans, Branchon and Gundrum. Rantham is a new member. That they seem like people who would have an issue with the spending, which is an interesting question, because Governor Evers, you know, he wanted more money for schools than what Republicans wanted, and he's said that they are not doing enough for schools. If you look at the numbers,
they're up $650 million.
Well, here's the thing. Overall, all funds, Governor Evers' all funds was an 8-point-some percent increase in
spending.
Took it
to $83 billion, and the budget they approved, 81.6, excuse me.
5.6% spending increase. That's a pretty healthy increase.
It is.
And now what's interesting is Republicans have made this pitch that this is a more conservative approach to the Evers budget. They did it with all this crazy, loony, liberal stuff and produce a more conservative document, but still spends 5.6% more all funds than before. So how conservative is it? Which is why those three voted no, along with Steve Noss and Dave Craig in the Senate,
right?
Because they say this spends too much. So the question is, did Evers pull Republicans more to his side by being so aggressive the budget introduced, you know, several months ago?
Okay, but when you look at the numbers, the GOP budget is incredibly close to what Evers recommended on transportation.
Just a different method to fund it.
Yes, and it's also close on UW. And although, no, we didn't get the Medicaid expansion, when you look at what the Republicans, they boosted what Evers recommended on February 28th for personal care aides, hospitals, a lot of important programs.
They just spent a lot more in state tax money to do it versus Evers using the federal money to do it.
The $324 million.
And changing how people are covered with the Medicaid program.
Right. Okay. So we've talked about the numbers. The budget is $81.6 billion, an upper of 5%. Very, very healthy. And now let's talk about the process. The governor yesterday tweeted that he's going to ask for the budget once it's formally enrolled. Are we looking at that next week or what? Because that starts that six-day clock, excuse me.
Senate President Roger Roth signed the document on Thursday. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was to sign it on Friday today, which then clears the way for it to go to the governor. Assuming that process plays out or hasn't already played out as we sit here Friday morning, it begins a window of 6 days, not counting Sunday, so basically a week. And it's not impacted by July 4th holiday, which means Evers has until Friday, July 5th to veto the entire document, sign the entire document, use his line-on veto power, or to allow it to become law without his signature. My bet is going to be an option number three, which is line-on veto.
Line-item veto. And, well, I'm struck. I didn't hear any of the top Democratic leaders in the ledge saying, this budget is so bad it must be vetoed.
No, not during the debate. There are a couple lawmakers, Democrats, who've pushed Evers to veto it because it doesn't hit certain marks. But as far as a unified message for Democrats, no, I haven't heard that from leadership.
Well, okay, but you covered, in fact, we both covered the Scott Fitzgerald press conference yesterday. He said, quote, worst thing in the world would be if the governor vetoed the entire GOP budget. Now, is he saying then, governor, if you veto the whole thing, you're not going to like anything we give you in budget version 2.0?
Well, here's the dynamic that I've heard about. So first, why would Evers veto the budget? He campaigned on three things, right? Fix the damn roads, education, expanding Medicaid. So on the first point, like we said, he got a plan to fund a lot of road work, just a different way.
Yes.
Education got a $500 boost, not the $1.4 billion. On Medicaid, he got really nothing. He wanted the expansion, and he didn't get the expansion. Now, Republicans, again, put a lot of state tax dollars into that program to draw down more federal money and pay for things. They're paying, you know, various people more money. Reimbursement rates are going up under their budget because of what they did. It just cost us as taxpayers more to do it than doing the expansion and that stuff. So, did Evers get enough? Well, he could say, I didn't get my Medicaid expansion. I didn't get enough for schools. Ergo, those are popular issues of the public. I should veto this budget because I have the high ground on the issues. But what happens if that occurs, what happens? And that's the debate that I've been hearing from people all week, is that what would Evers get? Look at that dynamic in the state Senate especially, okay? Republican caucus. 19-14 majority of Republicans. They lost two on the budget this week that they thought was too generous.
Yes.
If you go to a more, let's say Evers could convince those guys to do spend more money. What happens at caucus then? Well, look, Chris Cappinga from Delafield, Republican Delafield, got beat up because he sought and got put in the budget a provision that helps Tesla, electric car manufacturer.
Which we'll go to in a minute. Yep, go ahead.
He got beat up over it. He wasn't happy about spending increases, but said other things made him okay with it. Wouldn't Cappinga have an incentive if the budget came back to, like, restate his conservative bona fides?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Dewey Strobel, member of the Finance Committee. He was one of the four, quote-unquote, terrorists, right, 2 years ago that Robin Voss criticized because they got assurances from then-Governor Walker to veto things before they vote for the budget.
Yeah.
Fitzgerald put Strobel on the Finance Committee to ensure he had, like, a connection with that group and to kind of box Dewey in. He had to vote for the budget. Well, Dewey supported the budget on final passage, even though he said he doesn't happy with everything. What does Dewey Strobel do if the budget comes back? He's now a free agent. He can say, hey, look, I did this once,
that's
but this is not good enough for
that's
me.
That's a very good point.
But where's the math now? And that's the difficult thing for Republicans is, well, for Evers, too, is if you send it back, what do you get back from that?
Also, a former superintendent of public instruction, that's Mr. Evers. He cares deeply about our schools. That's what he rose to his political fame on. If he vetoes the entire budget, no one knows when our school districts, 424 school districts, are going to get new numbers on state aid, which means in the middle, potentially, of the school year, they'd have to reshuffle anyway.
And then it becomes a question of who would blink, all right? So think about this. Governor Evers is still the new guy on the block. He's only been in office for, you know, less than 6 months. So he's still, people are forming an opinion of him. There may be more risk for him to have this thing go into October than for Republicans, in part because, thanks to the maps Republicans have, there aren't many swing seats left in the state legislature. So what Republican goes back home and feels an immense pressure from, like, because he or she could lose in the fall of 2020 over this issue, versus they have to worry about a primary, about being too liberal on the spending, where they can go back and say, hey, look, we passed this budget that met Evers halfway. He vetoed it. You call Governor Evers complaint. Now, I don't know if that's the right thought. I mean, maybe it's like in 07, the budget went until late October, and it's like a pox in everybody's house. Everybody was just same old politicians.
Yeah.
kind of thing.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Well, okay, this is a good time to hear about 3 minutes worth of the debate on the budget, both in the Assembly and Senate. Please.
This is a budget that looks out for our vulnerable. Education funding, check. Healthcare, check. Transportation, check. And I'll even add check to that income tax cut. This is a good budget that both sides of the aisle should be voting for. And I believe that the people of the state of Wisconsin will be supporting as well.
This isn't about politics. The decision has real consequences on healthcare, on other state programs, on our state's future. You accuse Democrats of finding a way to oppose everything, yet Wisconsin Republicans won't even support a measure supported by Republicans in every neighboring state. You picked winners and losers when you didn't have to, and a budget that wastes state money, that fails to make the investments necessary and possible, is not a budget worthy of support.
Next year, we will have addressed every single one of the lead water pipes in the city of Green Bay without any ask of the state of Wisconsin. So before the largest city in the state of Wisconsin comes and asks all of us to fund it, perhaps they could take some advice, take some leadership, take some wisdom from the city of Green Bay, because it shouldn't just be called the year of clean water. It's more of the year of the Milwaukee money grab when it comes to this clean water issue.
Why would it matter where the majority of money would go if it meant that we would improve or save the lives of innocent children? The city of Milwaukee had 23,651 kids tested, and these are children under the age of six. 2,559 tested positive, meaning that they had lead levels that were higher than 5% MCG. These are children.
We're voting on a budget today that is going to put the state on a good path to fiscal soundness. Back in February, Governor Evers began the budget process by asking that Republicans in the legislature take steps forward in improving education, health care, roads and infrastructure, and giving a middle-class tax cut. The bill today is proof that we delivered on that deal. And I believe, in a much more responsible and deliberate way.
The budget we are debating today is not the will of the people or the vote for change. They're being nickeled and they're being dimed. They're falling short. Finding every excuse to underfund investments in our community, but somehow you find dollars to give away to your special interest groups. My. It is not what the people voted for, and this is not what is needed to address the crisis that is in our state.
I want to walk through the amendment to the budget that was added in the Assembly that, let's say, helped get it through the Senate. Let's just walk through the provisions. The lottery credit was up by $6.2 million to make this point. Property taxes on the mythical median valued would be lower than under the governor's budget.
And we got to say why we're chuckling. I mean, the mythical median valued home doesn't exist. That's why we call it mythical.
Yes.
It's a measure that LFB has done for years to kind of give us a gauge of, okay, the overall pot, here's what's happening. And if you take this median valued home, there is no real house with this property tax bill that's going to look like this. But yet they put $6.2 million in to drive it down by $5 over the next 2 years compared to the Evers measurement.
But they had to score that point, right?
Yeah.
Also, then they had to deal with this very substantive, potentially, proposal. The full ledge and not just joint finance would have to approve any mileage-based vehicle registration fee or tolling after a WSDOT study. That's a pretty substantive change.
Well, yeah, because Republican or conservatives went crazy about the idea of the Joint Finance Committee alone being able to approve
16 members.
Yeah, approve going to mileage-based fee. Now, mileage-based fee, for those at home, basically you say, I drive X number of miles.
Honor system.
That's how much I'm going to be taxed. Well, it's an honor system unless you have a black box in your car, which Robin Voss says he will never do.
That's true.
But then there's that thing about telling you, this reporting the state, how much you drive. But the biggest crux or biggest hang-up was the idea of not having the entire legislature vote on it, but like to see 16 members, that really did not sit well with some conservatives I talked to.
Right. Okay, now let's talk about three specific changes. Senator Andre Jock of Door County, he wanted 35 assistant district attorneys. That'll cost $3.5 million. He also wanted better pay for them, correct? Mm-hmm. That was part of that amendment.
Also as part of the Assembly GOP position kind of originally. They pushed a bill with a similar provision, so... But Jock, and I was told others also pushed for it, but he was one of the ones who kind of took credit for it, that he wanted this to help seal his vote.
Right. And those 35 assistant ADAs will be across the state, mm-hmm. not just in Door County. Senator Patrick Teston was interested in a building project. The old Wisconsin Rapids Tribune building had not been part of the capital budget recommended by Joint Finance. They brought that back. Any backstory on that?
So Teston's on, a freshman from Stevens Point, Republican. He's on the Building Commission. When the governor's capital budget was introduced, the Building Commission, he voted against this project because Republicans voted against all of them to send a message of, Governor, you're trying to borrow too much in this capital budget. Problem is, when they didn't include that in the final package on joint finance, Teston was left with a situation where he voted against a project, a popular one, in his own district and had nothing to go back and say, well, look, I support it in the end and got it done. So they created in the capital budget, their Joint Finance Committee, a $25 million pot of money for non-state projects. So like the UW system, those are state buildings. But sometimes the state will help pay for, you know, non-state owned projects. This is one of them. This $25 million bucks, this pot of money would help those kind of projects going forward. They create a carve out in that pot of money of $3 million bucks to pay for help pay for this project.
Building Commission, you will approve this. And then Senator Chris Cappinga has introduced bills in the past that would exempt Tesla from the mandatory law that says to sell a vehicle in Wisconsin, you have to do it through a dealership. Mm-hmm. And he got that bill added in that amendment. And then there was this question, the Journal Sentinel asked him, what's your personal involvement fixing Tesla parts? And he said, I don't make any money off that. What's your take on that?
So when I've asked people about this with Cappinga, look, it wasn't the only thing he wanted, right? I mean, he also had problems with the mileage-based fee study and then joint finance approving it without any further action. He had other questions about the budget. But this is one thing that he's pushed, and he said he suggested to Fitzgerald, the Senate Majority Leader, to do this provision. They put it in. He has a business where he basically tears apart Teslas. He
sells
parts.
Is it a business
parts.
Or a hobby? Because the Journal Sentinel, he was quoted as saying it's a hobby.
It's technically a business, but he says basically, I don't make any money off it. He's okay. Ask my wife. It's just basically a hobby, just doing this because he's fascinated by the cars. That said, it creates a personal connection to an issue. Like Jock with the DA positions, yeah. I mean, his district was probably going to, I
That's
can't remember the exact
statewide
list.
Public policy.
You know, Teston with the thing for his district, look, lawmakers often, and I mean often, seek project carve-outs for things in their districts.
Yeah.
This is a little bit different because it's personal. And the thing about it is that in putting this provision in, the Republicans have put a giant target on that provision for Governor Evers with the partial veto authority because it is pure policy. It is an easy veto for Governor Evers, and capping gets beat up right. in the process. So there's a question for people I talked to, like, well, if capping was a key vote, and he was, because you lose Noss and Craig, you need capping it. Why was this part of the ask? Why not go for something, I don't know, bigger,
okay.
more substantive than this, okay. especially knowing that you're creating this opportunity for Evers to veto it?
Right, and now let's hear from Cappinga. It's only a 30-second segment in terms of him responding to some of these issues that were raised. Please.
The Tesla provision is not something that I think is material enough to get me there. It was a combination of things. I didn't draw any lines on anything because obviously with an $80 billion budget, JR, the last thing I'm going to do is say there's one provision, especially something like this, that would get me there. I think all of those reforms were done to help the conservative side of the caucus say, you know what, there's something here that in the midst of the political environment that we're in, I can sink my teeth into.
JR, there was this very curious exchange in the assembly between Representative Mark Spreitzer and Assembly Majority Leader Steinicke. First of all, I want to ask you about it, but first of all, let's listen to it, please.
Republicans are here well into the evening in not quite the 11th hour with another last-minute amendment to a last-minute amendment. It just changes phrases like not to exceed to up to try to prevent the governor from exercising his constitutional authority. Earlier today, we had phrases like may not being changed to cannot for the same reason.
This amendment simply seeks to clarify the legislature's position to ensure that the governor cannot use his veto authority to subvert the will of the body, period.
This change changed may not to cannot, not to exceed changed up to, and the assembly speaker said the vast majority of what's inside the amendment is our effort to line item veto-proof it as much as possible. Now, Sean Johnson reported this morning that the budget is only 500 pages long mm-hmm. and not 1,500, 1,200 as usual. But how big a deal is this veto-proof amendment?
Well, this is a sign of, I don't say the paranoia, but the lengths Republicans went to try and figure ways around the veto authority. Because remember, with the Governor Evers can strike out, he cannot strike out individual letters, right? He can write down, he can't increase, but he can write it down. He can, however, strike out words. So may not is two words, right? Cannot is one. If you strike out not next to may, it becomes may, right? So they're trying to find ways to make sure that he can't change the meaning of what they wanted to do with that partial veto authority. Going to cannot does that. What was the other phrase? Going may not exceed?
Yes.
May
up to?
Yeah, may exceed can be created, but with up to, you can't do something different with that. So that's what they're trying to do.
All right, but everyone agrees, and even Speaker Voss said again that the governor has the strongest veto line mm-hmm. item veto authority in the nation. So is this going to be a significant infringement on his ability to rewrite it, assuming we accept your premise that he's not going to veto the whole GOP budget?
We'll see. And again, you know, if he vetoes it, I think it would surprise a lot of people. I don't rule it out, but I just think the going consensus is there's more reasons to rework it, right, than it is to veto the entire thing. That said, Look, Republicans are so trying to find ways to avoid giving him fodder that they actually nixed a tax cut they had approved for the self-employed for their health care costs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going that because they looked at the language and went, oh, if we do this, he could do this, this, and this with it. So that's why the budget is so short, because normally, I mean, the Fiscal Bureau does an exercise every budget of how many policy items are in the final document.
Only seven, you reported.
There were seven. Four of those are with this thing about local quarry regulations. Go back 2 years ago, and it was like 10 times that or
something
like that.
Yeah, I think
it
was like 90.
So, yeah. And the reason for the change is that Republicans won. Before, they had this is the one bill had to get done. They could maybe get things done that a few members didn't like because they vote for the entire budget, and they had Walker as an ally.
Yeah.
Now you have Evers, who's not an ally in the governor's office, so you have to be careful of what fodder you give him because he could take that, rework the entire thing, do something different, like this aggregate language, this quarry language.
Yeah.
It's all about getting aggregate, like stone, to road projects. The thing is, though, it's a fairly lengthy provision put in the budget. There is a sense that there is an assurance from the governor, not to lawmakers, mm-hmm. but to those in the aggregate community of if he vetoes it, it'll be an all or nothing deal. He wouldn't use it to rework it to change things because that's the only way the aggregate folks could convince Republicans to keep it in the budget. Now, I'm not sure that's an ironclad agreement.
I will
see how that goes. You know how the Capitol works sometimes, yep. but yep. that's the length they've gone to try and figure out ways to limit what Evers can do.
Right. Okay, new subject. At the Democratic State Convention, I talked to Democratic Senator Tim Carpenter, who's a member of the Weedick Board. I said, what about Mr. Hogan's future? He said, well, he expects Mr. Hogan to be gone after September 1. In an interview with the Milwaukee Business Journal, Mr. Hogan said, I do plan to leave in the fall. Let's just talk about his tenure. First of all, the first Weedick CEO, Paul Jaden, lasted 2 years. The second, Reed Hall, lasted 2 years. Mr. Hogan, when he leaves in the fall, will be there 4 years. So mm-hmm. I think there's a perception that he stabilized the agency that had been plagued by excessive turnovers, critical audits. But it's no real surprise, given how the lame duck session law said, Governor Evers, you may appoint the new CEO of Weedick, but not until after September 1. Yeah. So your take on?
Look, there's going to be a perception that Hogan's leaving because of the change in state law, that as of September 1st, Evers can appoint his own person as a Weedick secretary and CEO. Hogan has said he was going to leave this fall no matter what, even if Walker had stayed on. He wanted to get through a little more time with Foxconn. There are some critical audits. So, look, he stabilized the agency, but there are still audits that found problems. And he wanted more time to fix those, address them.
Right.
So his point is that this is going to happen no matter what. But the perception is going to be, look, the writing's on the wall of the change with Evers being governor.
Okay. The communications director for Weedick, David Callender, said this was the timeline he had provided Governor Walker and Governor Evers. The second sentence here, the date for his departure has not been set. Secretary Hogan still has some projects he is finishing. You just mentioned the F word, Foxconn. Mm-hmm. So go back a few weeks when the governor said Foxconn executives were the first ones suggesting changes to this contract. So do you think one thing left on Mr. Hogan's agenda is potential?
Oh, I mean, if nothing else, it's just seeing it through more of the process because Foxconn has said, I mean, it seems like the exact date changes, you know, but they were going to complete construction in fourth quarter of 2020. Now maybe it's 2020. Maybe.
But they're laying concrete in this huge facility down in Mount Pleasant.
So we're still moving toward that. So I don't know that it's about negotiating something new, but there are other things like this last audit that, again, found there are still issues that Hogan has to work out. The question becomes, who is Evers looking for to become the new Weedick secretary? Is it going to be from the business community, somebody who's going to be, I don't know, more of a Foxconn critic?
Yeah.
You know, what's he looking for? And I've heard the argument that Evers, he likes to connect with people. You know, he's looking for somebody who can connect the dots. That's mm-hmm. his big phrase, right? But somebody who's more aligned with philosophically. And again, I've never heard any suggestion of a conflict with Governor Evers and Mark Hogan.
Nor have I.
They seem to work well together.
Yes, they do.
The governor's office had nice things to say about him.
Governor Evers just spoke to the Weedick staff, mm-hmm. thanking them and saying how important their mission is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. New subject, the Supreme Court. This week reversed itself, reversed a 2016 precedent in terms of the superintendent of public instruction is one of six constitutional officers. Does he or she have to run their administrative rules, which implement policy decisions made by the legislature, through the executive branch?
Mm-hmm.
Answer, as of Now they do, but this reverses the 2016 precedent. We have the chief writing for the court, when the superintendent through DPI promulgates rules, it is exercising legislative power, comes not from the Constitution but from the legislature. In dissent, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, nothing in the Constitution has changed since the precedent was set in 2016. What has changed in the membership of the court? This is just something, well, in terms of limiting, clipping the wings of a constitutional officer. That's why we're mentioning it right now.
So you got to get a little background. 2011, Republicans pushed through a law that says all agencies have to submit proposed administrative rules to the governor for review. These rules basically, okay, one, they implement the laws. They fill in the gaps that might be in a law. But two, they take the authority granted to them by the legislature to create policy. So the DNR, for example, if you say you can regulate wildlife, they might create some policies of how to regulate wildlife. You know, it's a little bit of a lawmaking kind of function, if you will. That 2011 law said everybody has to go back to the governor to make sure that we're doing things the right way. DPI said that's not right.
Constitutional officer.
There was a lawsuit. 2016, the court says, yes, you cannot submit the constitutional officer, the DPI superintendent, to the governor's office.
Right.
However, that decision was 4-3 with one lead opinion, two justices concurring, and a fourth concurring. So it was kind of a fractured majority. They all got the same conclusion, but a different way.
Right.
Fast forward 2017, new law.
New law.
New
DPI,
layer of
thou
things.
Thou shalt.
Will, the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, goes back to court and says, okay, we want you to order them to comply with this new law.
And that's what we get.
What's interesting is the court says, yes, the superintendent has supervision of education. However, the rulemaking authority comes from the legislature, not from the Constitution.
Yes.
Ergo, lawmakers granted you the authority, they can limit it or even take it away.
Right, and I know you want to come back to this in stock picks. Okay, we have one more item that was announced after Sean and Patrick did Rewind last week. For the record, the governor vetoed the four abortion limit laws. Born Alive bill was vetoed, ban abortions because of race, gender, or disability, prohibit Medicaid reimbursements for abortion providers. The governor said everyone should have access to quality health care. Politicians shouldn't be interfering with decisions made between patients and their health care providers. Majority Leader Steinke said, unfortunately, Governor Evers once again made clear that he believes protecting babies in Wisconsin simply isn't a productive use of his time. JR, let's just be clear. There's going to be no attempt to override on these?
Maybe they try, but they're not going to get anywhere. I mean, nothing's going to change. They have the vote, so that's just kind of the way it is. Look, this is, other than the Born Alive bill, because that sparked nationally a little bit by the conversation with Ralph Northam, Virginia, the governor, and his comments.
Yeah.
These other things have been around for a while.
Okay.
They didn't do them before. Question is why. You know, they had Governor Walker, who was an abortion foe, so why not do it then? There may be some politics at play here. I mean, the bottom line for all four of these bills is that this becomes fodder for 2020.
That's what it's about.
And firing up the bases.
Okay, we got about 2 minutes for you to whip through your stock picks. Rising.
Unemployment trust fund, so you got to be a geek to pay attention to stuff like this, but I am. So the trust fund is what employers pay taxes into to pay for unemployment insurance, right? We hit, at the end of April, an all-time high of $1.9 billion in that fund. Why is that important? The fund dictates the level of taxes you pay as a business, or part of what you dictates it, because of how much is in there. We are at the lowest schedule right now for businesses, and barring a complete collapse in like the next 3 days, we will stay there. So businesses are going to enjoy that lowest tax rate again for another year because of that healthy balance. Now, the warning is if we hit a recession in 2020.
Which we did in 2010, which is when that fund was in deep deficit. Go ahead.
That could start to tax that, and then you have to watch that, keep an eye on that for the taxes.
Okay, you got 20 seconds on your mixed.
So, yes, DPI superintendent has to submit the rules to the governor. Guess what? The governor's a friend. A year ago, different story. Governor Walker, Superintendent Evers, yes, big conflict.
Yes.
Now you have Governor Evers, Secretary Taylor, Superintendent Taylor, it's going to be okay.
Okay, and then falling.
Some Democrats, big decisions this week to the U.S. Supreme Court.
5-4 decision.
The federal courts have no role in policing partisan gerrymanders.
Astonishing decision.
It means legislatures across the country, Democratic and Republican, are free to draw maps any way they want to on partisan grounds. There is no check coming from the courts. Look, for some Democrats, there was a trial scheduled for July in Wisconsin on the Wisconsin maps. But that trial was predicated upon a decision in the North Carolina and Maryland cases saying, yes, you can have a standard by which to judge maps in the courts. because of the ruling this week, it means no trial in Wisconsin. No trial in Wisconsin, no chance to overturn the maps. No chance to change the maps, no real hope for Democrats in the Assembly in 2020 unless there's a complete collapse by Donald Trump in the ballot.
Okay, but you saw the press release from Governor Evers in the wake of that Supreme Court decision, and the last line, I will veto any unfair redistricting plan.
Look, can you see between my fingers?
Yes.
That's how much chance I think there is of Governor Evers and Republican lawmakers reaching a deal on a map.
And you just said that, once again, our next set of redistricting lines based on the 2020 census will be drawn by federal judges.
Okay. Or the state Supreme Court. That's what to watch. Where does it end up? Where does that battle go? I'm not sure about that. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm not going to predict, but that's what it was.
That's a really good issue, but we're out of time. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And J.R., if we get a definitive decision from the governor on the budget, you and I will be back here next week. Otherwise, maybe we'll take a holiday. That's Rewind for June 2-8.